Thank you, Chris, and we're very, very grateful for the Institute, to the Institute for hosting this. It's extremely kind of them. I'm your chair. My name's Tim Brighouse. I would just, as I often say now, and since I've put my back out this morning, I feel it very strongly that I'm a person with a long history and a short future. But I have been around, and it seems to me that the first election that affected my life was 1945, and I think the one that's just coming up is as important as the 1945, and one can only hope that it turns out to be as propitious as the era that immediately followed that war. Just some housekeeping. I think if we hear a fire alarm, we'd better get out by the nearest entrance and quietly assemble in that square on floor 4, which is the way to get out. Just to remind you, it's floor 4 you're aiming for. Second thing to say is that we've got the following are going to give some words tonight. I'm going to say a few words in a minute. Then Sir David Bell will appear on a video. And then Melissa Benn is on the platform. Then we've got Estelle Morris also on a video. Antalina Kennedy ditto. Then we've got Tony Pierce, who's here, who's president of the NUT. Then we've got another video of David Putnam. All these videos are about 5, 6, 7 minutes. Jenny Thompson is here, distinguished head teacher of St Mary's Primary School in Manchester. And then we haven't got here, but is going to appear. He's at a school. He's at school at the moment. He's Tom Sherrington from Highbury Grove. And then Fred's going to say, Fred Jarvis is going to say a few words. And I'll say something about them as I introduce each. But I'll do that from there. The other thing to say is that the people who greeted us, who came in, are students from the new Vic, the sixth form college and post-16 institution, comprehensive post-16 institution in Newham. I emphasise the sixth form. And they're terrific young people, all of whom are determined to become teachers. So we're delighted they're here. And what I... Just simply to say to you that we all gave you that round of applause because we know you are the future and that everything that you do is going to unlock the minds and the shut hearts of the children that are lucky enough to encounter you as teachers. And therefore you are the most important people in the room, and all of us actually think that. What they will do is this. If you would like to contribute when people have spoken, and let me say straight away, we're finishing on the nail at 8:30, so probably you'll get speeches for about an hour, then we should have a good hour and a quarter, hour and a half at least, to contribute. If you want to contribute, I'd like you to complete a slip. Now, have they got the slips? Or yes, you've got the slips over there. So our new Vic students have got the slips. If you know you would like to contribute now, and I'll do it every now and again, just put your hand up and they will come and you can scribble down your name. And then when it's over, we'll know the names of the people who want to contribute. So it would be helpful. I'll do this more than once, but if you know now you'll want to contribute, just shove your hand up and one of them will dodge along and give you that. Then when you do contribute and you're called, they will make sure that you get a roving mic. So that's that out of the way. You know, I started... So I'll just do my bit now and then introduce the David Bell on a video. I started by mentioning 1945 and saying it was an important period. And I've just been asked to write something which is rooted in my career and inviting me to think about how policy making has changed since I've been close to policy making. during that time. So I've looked from 45 to the present. And I want to argue with you tonight that really, if you look at that period, which I did for the purposes of writing this chapter, you can discern, I think, three distinct periods. The sort of post-44 Act up to the late 60s, early 70s, going on during that decade and even beginning into the 80s. So up to about 60, I think late 68 is when it really happens, the summer of 68, you have a period of education which is distinguishing feature would be optimism and trust. It's an optimism that's born from that spirit of 45, a determination to create a new and better society than we'd had both during and before the war. And it took as read that education was a good thing, and that you couldn't have enough of it, and that therefore it would be a period of gradual expansion, not overwhelmed by a national debt or deficits. People talked of the society they wanted to create, and they did so, and that period persisted. I mean, the only advice, let me say, to primary colleagues here, in particular Jenny, was that the only advice government gave you was something called Story of a School, which was published in 1949, reissued in the 50s, and lasted right up to the Plowden Report. And in the introduction, the minister says that this is the story of a school which has done great things, a primary school, and that his only advice was that head teachers should go and do likewise so that we could learn from the practice that they got up to. Now, I think it's unlikely that we're going to return to a period quite like that. But that was the period. Now, the first doubts, I think we move into a period of doubt and disillusion, starting in about 68, because I do remember that vice-chancellors were horrified to be summoned by Wilson because of the student unrest in that summer. Then we had the Black Papers. People will remember or know, hear, heard tell of the Black Papers. Then we had a school called Rising Hill, death of a comprehensive, and we had William Tyndale Primary School, and we had an oil crisis, and we had growing doubts about the sanctity of the secret garden of the curriculum. And that persists, and probably it's punctuated for me by two things. One was Ashley Bramall, who in 1976, similar to Callaghan, who did the Ruskin speech, Ashley Bramall said that not all the all the horses in the Education Officer's stable in the Inner London Education Authority, where he was leader, are winners, and we'd better start cutting back on the ones that really aren't winners. There was a kind of growing doubt and disillusion. And then we move into a period that you'll recognise only too well. All the white papers preceding the 40 pieces of legislation since 1980, or 40 or more, John Fowler's here, he'll correct me precisely, but all those white papers talk about choice, autonomy, diversity. They all have those phrases in. And it is the neoliberal love of the market. So we move into a period of markets and necessarily and perversely managerialism. Because you're worried about equity and you're worried about equality, therefore you need to be managerial to make sure that the working of the markets doesn't, which inevitably produces both success and failure, kind of doesn't produce too much failure. So you have perversely managerialism. Now, you could say, and I would say, that the reason I'm optimistic is that there now seems to be doubt on all over the place about the wisdom of that particular course of action, that it could produce, or it is necessarily going to produce, a better or a good society. And my doubts aren't to do with the increasing interest in the 1%, nor is it to do with the banking collapse, which does cause a kind of sliver of a doubt about the effectiveness of markets. It is more in the doubts applied to education, so that there is, for the first time, agreement amongst all the parties that there must be a college of teaching, which suggests to me that people feel that the mistrust of teachers has gone too far. It's gone so far that, I don't know if you read the Times, Ed, last Friday, but there was an extraordinary first article on education by the Prime Minister about how much he trusts teachers. Which, let me say, is not, as you think, very little. He apparently trusts them absolutely. And has done much to persuade them of that. But they are all agreed that they want a college of teaching. What we give the college of teaching to do is absolutely vital. Secondly, when I took on the London Challenge in 2002, I wanted partnerships of schools. It seemed to me that the model of the autonomous self-standing school just wouldn't work. I've got to say, I was told very clearly that, look, Tim, we'll indulge quite a few of the things that you want to do, but we're not going to indulge that. You may want partnerships of schools, and if you can persuade schools to partner each other, that would be fantastic. But we believe in the autonomous competitive school. That has now changed. I mean, if you read politicians now, they say the autonomous self-standing school alone can't do the business, that there needs to be partnerships of schools. So I would argue that there is emerging a feeling of mistrust of teachers gone too far, and a feeling that autonomous competitive schools have gone too far, and that we ought to emphasise that. And lastly is there's a feeling of Ofsted isn't fit for purpose. And that's across all the parties too. And I pray in aid on that, a visual aid. It's a dramatic visual aid, as you can well see. It is a report written by somebody who's in this room, which is, it's called A Report by Her Majesty's Inspectors on the Effects of Local Authority Expenditure Policies on Education Provision 1984. It was the eighth such report. Which people didn't want at the time, but it was a period, I distinctly remember, of shrinking resources and a concern of what the impact of those shrinking resources was. And if you read this report, we have Her Majesty's Chief Inspector saying things that no government of the day would have liked to hear. It has morphed into the annual Her Majesty's Chief Inspector report, but I invite you to read the present ones, and there is no comment on expenditure. And I've got to say this, colleagues, we are already in different ways, a period of absolute reductions in resources. And if there has ever been the need for somebody independently to be reporting on expenditure and the impact of expenditure, it is now, and I personally believe they should report to a body that comprises the National Governors Association, the Local Governors Association, and I would say the National College of Teaching and probably some of the major unions, so that people can really know what the impact is. So my plea, and the plea for all of us, is this. I want four things for the future, very briefly and quickly. I would like the Secretary of State to resume his duty and power to secure a sufficient supply of suitably qualified teachers. It was one of three powers that were present for the Secretary of State in 1945. It's now been abandoned. It's left the market. And we're ploughing into a period both of shortage of teachers and shortage of places. And I would like the Secretary of State to have that power. Now, I never thought I'd ever say that I wanted the Secretary of State to have another power. But I would like him to resume that power and give up the 1,999 that he's already got. So that's number one. Number two, I'd plea for a reform of Ofsted. I'd establish it as an independent HMI commenting on national standards, prescribing an arrangement for school review. Wouldn't let schools review themselves. I'd nominate who two other schools would be reviewing with their school. They'd report locally. I'd want, in the same way of a reform of accountability, probably an exam system that is changed and gives greater primacy, as it does in the universities, to teacher marking externally moderated and validated, and I don't mind if they're nationally laid down. Both those reforms that I've alluded to there will be accompanied, for me, by a reform of local democratic involvement, which I will give to groups of local authorities, probably in 8 or 9 regions, where they'd have control of school improvement services rather than left to the market. They would make sure that local authorities were planning properly school places, and they would make sure, and I'm sure Melissa's going to talk about this, that admission arrangements were fair, and they're not at the moment. And my third, maybe my fourth, it is my fourth element, would be to establish a college of teaching. That's uncontentious. And last of all, I'd want decisions on education to be made by ensuring that there is a process whereby, before a Secretary of State said something, we had comments from a body, probably the College of Teaching plus others, of what their view on the proposal was and what the research says. Never forgotten Ashley Bramall complaining to me one day in my job in the Inner London Education Authority. He said, "For heaven's sake, you're in charge of the research branch. Why on earth can't you give me a one-armed researcher?" And I said at that point, well, look, I thought it was politically incorrect of him to suggest that he wanted a one-armed researcher. I said, what the hell do you mean? So he said, well, all you can do is give me research that says, on the one hand this, and on the other hand that. And the truth is, of course, that most research does make that point. And we want to do away with the notion that there is one answer, and the only answer that matters is the one that the Secretary of State, with too much power, is able to do. Now, that's all I want to say. So I want to say I'm in a period of optimism. I think the hope can be rekindled. I think there are telltale signs that is possible. And I'm going to hand over now to David Bell, who, as you know, is Permanent Secretary and Her Majesty's Chief Inspector and now Vice-Chancellor in Reading. And he is going to appear on the screen, and I've got a feeling he's going to say some things, if he stuck to what he was saying not so long ago, that chimes in with some of those points. So over to David, and I'm hoping it'll now come up.